living proof that you should never give up. And you should always keep chasing your dreams, because no matter how people will discourage you, there's always room for you.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Fabrice Sapolsky is the co-creator and writer of Marvel Comics' Spider-Man Noir. He has worn many hats, including journalist, designer and editor, writer, artist, and entrepreneur. Growing up in France, Fabrice always loved American comic books. He moved to the United States in 2015, and in 2019, he founded Fair Square Comics, a publisher that highlights the work of immigrants, minorities, and underrepresented creators worldwide. Well, welcome. I'm excited to have you because your profile looked very intriguing. You're a comic book creator, an entrepreneur, and I like how you call yourself an immigrant entrepreneur. Yes, because you're originally from
France.
Yes, France. Okay, and you're the founder of Fair Square Comics.
I know, it's very complicated. All these new names you have to learn very quickly. Yes,
Fair Square Comics. Okay, so Fabrice, tell us about how you became a comic book creator. Like, when did that all start for you?
The comic book creator part is pretty easy, actually. It started with a silly idea.
How most things start with something.
Well, I mean, there's a prequel to that origin story is that I have a hard time as a person having people say no to me. So it's usually like the spark for entrepreneurs. Like, okay, some people will say to you, well, it will not work. It will never work. You go nowhere with this. And it's like, well, I'm going to prove them wrong because I roll like that. So, and it started with me at a very early age. Like when I was 21 years old, I was in college and I was studying history. But I was fascinated with art because I was already a comic book fan. I entertained the idea of becoming an artist, and my mom discouraged me flat out, like, you will never have a career. It will be terrible. You will never make any money, and all like, and I listened to them. I listened. So there was no way I was going to give up like this. So I came back with this. I studied history like by default because I had to do something.
Right. Yeah.
And I discovered it was in the early 1990s, and I discovered the power of at what we called at the time desktop publishing, which is graphic design now. And I delved into it. So I wanted to attend graphic design school and courses, but it was very, very new at the time, and people were saying, no, we can't have you. You're too skilled. You're already in college. Why do you want to go to a place where we welcome students who don't have a degree, who don't have anything? So you're not going to take the place of someone who comes from an underprivileged background. And I said, but I'm from an underprivileged background. So why don't I have the right to go there too? No. You look smart. You sound smart. You'll be fine. And I hated that. It sounded unfair to me. So I self-taught how to be a graphic designer. I borrowed every penny I could to buy a Mac. And at the time, Macs were pretty expensive. So I had a crappy Mac for a lot of money. And I self-taught. And I became a graphic designer. And like with years and experience and all, I could find work. And then after a few years of that, I was bored. And so it was like, I want to write again. I want to be a journalist. I want to write. People was like, well, designers don't write. It's impossible. No one does that. I said, well, but I came from history. I have a liberal arts background, so I know how to write. No, you can't. So, okay, well, then I guess I'll have to do it myself. And I created my first company, which led me to create a news magazine about American comics in my home country. And I didn't know anything about being a professional, about being an entrepreneur, about I didn't know anything about it. But it came out, success, failure, success again. And a few years later, as I was doing the magazine, I had an idea that was a silly idea about a dark version of Spider-Man. And I pitched it to one of my friends, who's a British writer. His name is David Hine. And I pitched the idea to him, and I said, like, well, I just got this idea. Do you think that Marvel would be interested? I mean, it's silly. There are no French writers at Marvel, and I know that I have zero chances, but, like, I'm trying. Like, and first he said, that's dumb. Nobody will ever buy it. And then he changed his mind, and we ended up co-creating and co-developing this work together. And Marvel agreed to it, and it became Spider-Man Noir, which is now one of the biggest Spider-Man incarnations. It was even in a movie in 2017. In 2018, it was in the animated Spider-Verse movie. So,
the animated, I'm sorry, there was like an aircraft flying over here. It might be pretty loud. So the animated...
Animated Spider-Man, which had the Oscar.
Yeah.
So the character that I co-created was in that movie.
Oh, okay. I think that's one, my favorite one. That's the one that looks very comic-y, right? With all the bright colors and...
Yes.
Oh, wow. What is it called? Spider Universe or something? Into the Spider...
Into the Spider-Verse. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you created a character on there.
No, I created a character for a comic book. And then the production team from the movie liked my character enough so that they included it in the gang that was in the movie.
Which character was it?
Spider-Man Noir.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Except my version was not really for kids. It was really a very dark, gritty, and violent version. They toned it down for the movie.
Right.
Yeah. And it came out from a comic book that I co-wrote.
Right. So that's the part where he meets like all the different spider.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes. That's so cool. Okay.
So that was my I went from I'm a journalist talking about comics to, I'm a comic book creator. Like I'm published as a comic book creator. And then it was very hard for me to get back to being a journalist. So I kind of like phased out the journalism part, and I tried my best to be a full-time creator, but it's not as easy as it sounds. So I published a few other miniseries after in the US and one in France, but it was never as successful, of course, as Spider-Man, because I mean obviously when you're an independent you don't have the same marketing power as Marvel, Disney. Right. But I was still happy that I could do it. And then in 2015, I decided to get serious about my comic book career, and I moved to the United States.
In 2015, you moved to the United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
At the tender age of 44 years old.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Wow, that's an incredible story.
But it was just the beginning of the journey, because like in the last 6 years, so much has happened.
Okay.
And I worked, I worked independently as a freelancer first, and then I was hired by a company. I was in New York at first for 2 years. And then I moved to LA because I took a job at a company called Humanoids, which is a publisher. I was an editor for them. And last year with 2020, I was left without a job, and I decided, after trying to apply to about 300 jobs, I decided that it was maybe time to get back to my roots and be an entrepreneur again. And this is where Fair Square Comics happened and where we are now, because a lot of things that has happened in a year. It's just marvelous.
Yeah, I can imagine so. So let's go back to the news magazine about comics that you created. Like, what's it called?
Comic Box.
Comic Box. And I was just talking to someone the other day where she created at one point, she's also an entrepreneur. She was in South Africa. She's from South Africa. And she created a local newspaper. And I said, how do you even begin to do that? And she luckily was sponsored by like a local bank but this was a big.
Oh, wow.
That's good. I mean, it was, yeah. So how?
I was not sponsored at all. I had no money.
So yeah, tell us a little bit about how you created that and what that all involved.
So I mean, of course, because I was a designer, I didn't have to hire a designer, so I could do it myself.
Yeah.
And I knew how to write, and I knew how to write and conduct interviews, so I could do it myself. So I kind of devised a new system where I was writing and designing at the same time, which was saving a lot of time and money.
Yeah.
And at the time, at the time it was in the late 90s, early 2000s. My first wife was working with me. She still is a journalist, even though we're divorced. And so she came to work with me, and I had a partner, which was not the best partner, but he was a nice person, but like he didn't bring a lot to the table, so I had to do a lot of things myself. Mm-hmm. And so I hired a couple of people, and fortunately success was there immediately, because there was a need for this kind of product at the time, and we filled that void. So cash flow came, then went, because press is very cash, consuming.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have to create a printer, and when you start, they don't necessarily give you a line of credit, so you have to negotiate it. Mm-hmm. In my unlucky luck, at the time, my grandmother said to me, "Okay, so I want to give you your inheritance money." Mm. And my grandmother, she's a Holocaust survivor.
Mm.
She was a Holocaust survivor.
Mm-hmm.
So most of her revenue came from the state as compensation from mm-hmm. being deported for 2.5 years in the death camps, mm-hmm. where she came back. And in France, the status of people who have been deported is that they're just like army veterans. So she had the pension of an army veteran. So it was like a lot of money for her, because she was disabled, so she didn't really have the need for that money. So she decided to split everything she had in 7 for all the grandchildren. And I had my chair. And so thanks to that money, I could start the company, and I put everything into this. And of course I lost everything. It's like, you know, sometimes companies go up and go down. So
right.
My first 3 years were kind of like a roller coaster.
Right.
But and I went bankrupt. But it was such an incredible experience. I learned everything about how to be an entrepreneur. How to be a journalist, how to be a press person, how to be a manager. It was amazing.
This was in France.
It was in France, yes.
Okay.
I had two companies in France, and then I created Fair Square Comics in the US.
In the US, okay.
But the systems are very different. But yeah, I had no other kind of backup financially. It was just me and that small stash of money, mm-hmm. and I had to, you know, be creative, and apparently we were, because we lasted 3 years like that.
Yeah, and at the end of the 3 years, how did you feel when it didn't pan out as you probably expected or wanted it?
I was hit by depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when, and it's something that you probably have with a lot of entrepreneurs, when you're the alpha and omega of your own company every day, and it stops like that, you have to deal with the consequences. You have to deal with the shame. You have to deal with, oh, you've been owing money to these people that you have a lot of esteem for. There was a recovery process that was for about 3 years. Mm. I was like really, processing the loss of the first company. I didn't want to hear about being an entrepreneur anymore. I took a job as a graphic designer at another press group, and I just kept my head down and started working. And I mean, I had, small children at the time, so it helped that I had my kids to really ease the pain of losing that virtual kid that is the company.
Yeah.
But it was really complicated to deal with all these emotions and all the loss. And the thing is, with my partners, the people who were working with me, some were my employees, some were partners, we kept in touch every day because we felt the need to talk about what happened. And that link that has never faded away help us create a second company with different rules in 2004, which instead of being just a press company, was a service provider. We were packaging magazines for other companies. Mm-hmm. We were what we call in our jargon a packager.
Okay.
And so I went to the companies that took me down because like my first company died, not only because we ran out of cash, but also because there was a company that decided that we had to disappear. We had to go.
Right.
So they just hit us with the competition that, and we didn't have enough money to survive.
Right.
But ironically, the company that took us down became one of the main clients of my second company.
Wow.
And it was a good business decision. And so after the first company, Comic Box was canceled because the company died.
Yeah.
But when we got the name back and we managed to bring the magazine back, and it was ultimately published by this other company that destroyed us in the first place.
Wow. That is an incredible story.
Yes.
So
they were the publisher for 11 years after that.
The company that, as you say, destroyed you was your competition at the time.
Yes.
And then they ended up reprinting.
The best partner, yes.
Printing partner. As partner.
Yeah, they became the publisher.
The like, publisher, not of, just the printer.
Instead of being our own publisher and have our limited means because we were a very small company.
Yeah.
We partnered with this bigger company called Panini, and they became our publisher for 11 years.
Wow.
We had our editorial freedom, but we were in a system where they had our backs and we had theirs.
Okay.
And we did a bunch of things together. We did not just Comic Box, but we also did a lot of children's interest magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of children magazine in my career. I love working with kid content, creating it, designing it, making it happen. It's something that I really love.
Yeah.
And next to Comic Box, which was like for adults,
yeah,
there were all these other magazines, and I worked with wonderful licenses that Panini had. Like, I mean, I worked with all the Marvel ones, of course, but I also worked with Batman. I worked with Yu-Gi-Oh. I worked with Dragon Ball. I worked with like so many licenses, and it was really a blessing because while it lasted. Even though, I mean, when you're working with just a big partner, sometimes you feel you're being put in a corner. And we didn't see eye to eye all the time, but we were like a very odd couple. Like, it was a relationship that had phases.
Yeah.
So sometimes we were like really good together. Sometimes it was really odd. Sometimes we were really bad, but we never broke up.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left, even when I left when I left France, I kept freelancing for them.
Mm.
So I only stopped recently actually to focus on my new company, but yeah, it was a very interesting and long-lasting relationship that defied everything because like they we come from nowhere, nobody knows us, they kill us when we prove that we have our space on the market, they help us come back. It's really, there's a lot of things that happen.
Yeah, I mean that's like the ultimate story of victory. Right? You feel like you're defeated, and then you end up partnering with the big monster that you thought was out to get you, and that's just the ultimate like happy ending.
I don't know if it's a happy ending. I mean, I certainly made tons of friends over there because we learned to know each other over time. Mm. And they were also from a different culture because most of the staff was in Italy. Mm-hmm. And so Italians and French, I mean, there's kind of a weird friendly competition. Mm. so we kept bashing each other, but it was fun. It was really fun. I mean, these years were really interesting. A lot has happened. Yeah. But there was no way I could stay in my home country and keep being an entrepreneur because the system there doesn't favor people coming from nothing. Mm-hmm. And in France, I mean, it's very harsh to say it, but when you're an entrepreneur and you're not in high tech, which is easier because you have the support of banks and the system, but when you're a creative person in art and creation and publishing, you have absolutely no help, and it's impossible. If you don't start with money, you can't go in.
Wow, that's kind of interesting, because I think most people, at least myself, when I think of France, I think of art and creativity and it's just kind of ironic that they're not really supported.
Well, I mean, let's say that the support system is only for a certain amount of creators that are like carefully chosen. Uh-huh. Not everyone gets access to it. Mm. And especially us, because we always were supporters of American comics. Mm. So we were not producing French comics. Right. If we were producing French comics, it would have been different. But our first love was American comics. So it was like, oh, well, no, thank you.
Right.
And I mean, there were some humiliations. Sometimes we were going to festivals and people were like giving us the face because we were different, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's also something that is very subtle about, because I'm a minority.
Yeah.
Very subtle in the French system, where if you're a minority, you're not like them, and so it's also very complicated in some spaces. Fortunately, I had with me other people that were from the majority, and sometimes I would send them instead of myself.
So you are a minority in France?
Yeah, I grew up a minority in France. Yeah.
You grew up where?
No, I mean I'm an ethnic minority. I'm Jewish. And so we represent almost nothing. We're a very small ethnic group. We're like 0.4% of the population. So it's really nothing.
All right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So then that kind of adds a new dimension I didn't even realize was like there. So you're ethnic Jewish and you're growing up in France. Yeah. And then you immigrate to the United States in 2015. How was your experience as an entrepreneur different in the United States, as an ethnic Jew in the United States, different than France?
Well, first, creating a company here is easy. Mm-hmm. It takes 15 minutes, and everything is very easy. Mm-hmm. Let's say that there's still bureaucracy in the U.S., but it's not placed at the same, it's different. I don't know how to really explain it, but like creating a company in France takes a long time. You have to give guarantees. And even worse, back in the day, like 20 years ago, you had to have 7,500 euros, which is about $9,000, mm-hmm. just to create the company. Mm-hmm. Then after that, they lowered that, and then you could create a company with 1 euro of capital. But the banks would say, oh, well, if you're one of those 1 euro capitals, we're not going to give you a card. We're not going to give you a line of credit. We're not going to give you anything. You mm-hmm. always have to prove yourself. Mm-hmm. And of course, everything takes time. And like here, people have a tendency to trust you if you're an entrepreneur with a good idea. Mm. In France, it's harder. because there's this constant shadow of doubt that is cast on. Mm-hmm. And it's everyone. I mean, if you go online, it's been documented many times that creating a company from scratch in France is really difficult. Hmm. But creating it is not as hard as maintaining it, because once you're created, you have to maintain the company for a very long time, mm-hmm. and that's harder too. And when you're an entrepreneur, you also have less rights as an employee, because the French system is in an employee based labor system. Mm-hmm. So when you're an employee, you have all the rights. Hmm. When you're an entrepreneur, you don't. Hmm. You're on your own.
It's interesting. Yeah.
So it was exhausting, and honestly, doing that was not fun. Hmm. Having a company here is completely different, because of course, I still have like administrative duties and I have to hire the right person, and yes, I have obligations as an entrepreneur. But at the same time, everything is easy, because everything is made for you to conduct your business the best possible way.
Hmm. Okay. So
and there's also a sense of competition, because you have 50 states. Yeah. So you have 50 different laws, and states know how to compete with themselves to attract the best entrepreneurs. And mm-hmm. and I think that's healthy.
Mm, okay, that's interesting. So then because I know that you want to encourage other immigrants.
Yes.
In the entrepreneurial space. So what's your biggest message to other immigrants coming in?
I mean, let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. This country was made by immigrants, even though a lot of people forgot about it. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, what I'm living is something that generations have lived before me. Mm-hmm. And that's also why I was not surprised, even though I was disappointed when I couldn't find another job in 2020 in my field. Because I'm like, okay, well, at the end of the day, even if you go to the first round, the second round, the third round, the fourth round, between an American and me, they will always choose an American. And I mean, even though nobody will admit it publicly, because that would be discrimination.
Right.
We know it happens. Mm-hmm. And that's, in a way, that's fair, because it happens in France too. Like in France, you have like between a French person and a foreigner, you will choose a French person, because you have the impression that this person will understand more accurately what you're saying, or you will be able to convey the orders better, or managing people better, or editing people better, or whatever.
Yeah.
That's unfair. Mm-hmm. But that's what it is. People are biased. We're humans. Okay. And so in a way, it was a blessing in disguise for me to get back to my entrepreneurial days, because I was like, okay, so what's your lane? I had spent 2.5 years at a publisher where I accumulated a lot of experience, but also a lot of frustrations. Mm-hmm. Because I like the fact that people like me, who are immigrants and minorities, but we also welcome LGBTQ, disabled, all more generally all underrepresented categories of creators, would have a space where they could keep their material, keep owning their rights, not being taken advantage of. And I realized that was my lane. That was my mission. And, mm-hmm. and so the thing that started it, and you'll understand where I'm going right here is we have this beautiful tool called Kickstarter. Kickstarter is a crowdfunding platform mm-hmm. that helps a lot of entrepreneurs like me, raise money for their ideas. And so I decided to go on Kickstarter. I already used Kickstarter before, but this time I was trying to make it more industrial. Like I'm going to have a Kickstarter this month, then I'm planning like 4, 5, 6. And I've seen it happening with other creators, with other American creators. So I kind of like played from their book and I just apply my differences and say, okay, I'm going to show that not only us immigrants, creators, and minority creators, we have what it takes, but we're going to make the house bigger for everybody. Hmm. And we're going to be very inclusive in our way of doing things. my own company, like it's a family owned business, but we're three, but we're from different ethnicities. Mm-hmm. We're from different backgrounds. And it's also important to show that image, to show that we're not just, and I always like, I always try to fight the, oh, you look this. No, it's not because I look the way I look that you have to assume that I am this. I'm not. Mm. And if you care to know who I am and know my story, and you will know that I'm not who you think I am. And we have more in common that we have differences.
Is it because
we have differences?
Is it because you look just like a regular white man? People are like, oh, you're just a white.
Well, it depends. Sometimes people like label me like Arabic or white. Oh, or, okay. Or Mediterranean, or like, I have like plenty of, like, let's say that my ethnicity is fluid. as people see it.
Yeah.
But I like to educate people. I like to tell them that, like, my mom's family came from North Africa. My dad's family came from Eastern Europe, and these are completely different things. And they met in France. But I have a very vast cultural background.
Yeah.
And the fact that I chose to be an immigrant myself, is also like, kind of like what my ancestors were. Like they came from other places. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, this is who we are. Mm. We keep moving because we go where we think that we can make a difference. And I think I could make a difference here.
Right.
With the comics that I make, and with the products, and also opening doors for others. Last year was very important because after the murder of George Floyd, mm-hmm. I was very angry. Mm. I was very angry because I've always been an ally to the Black community. Mm-hmm. And it was very important to me to show solidarity. Mm. But as an immigrant, and especially a green card holder under the previous administration, I had to keep my mouth shut because everything I said could be leading me to having problems.
Yeah.
And so I was talking to my friend T.C. Harris, who's a African American journalist from the East Coast, and we were talking because he's also a comic book fan and became a comic book creator now. And when we were talking about how to have the proper response to what's happening in the streets, he said to me, "Well, then you should do it. You should do something in your field. You should do a comic book or a graphic novel." And together we created this anthology called Noir is the New Black.
What is it called?
Noir is the New Black.
Oh, okay.
Which is an anthology of 16 short stories from Black creators from all around the world.
Mm.
And it was an instant hit on Kickstarter. We raised nearly $50,000 last year. And it was kind of like, okay, so my company's there, but the pool is way bigger than I expected. And so we have to let more people in from more diverse backgrounds.
Yeah,
and we have to apply what I was applying to myself to a bigger pool of people.
Okay,
and that's what Fair Square Comics is all about: is publishing all these people who are coming to us, and make sure that they're properly treated, they're informed, they keep their rights, and they can then go wherever they want, but they know that they will be respected. They will always be respected.
Mm.
It's like the golden rule applied to everybody.
Right. So Fair Square Comics is like an all-inclusive. Correct. I mean, it sounds like the message is,
yes,
we will accept you.
The tagline is comics for the rest of us.
Ah, I like that. Do you guys have different, in Fair Square Comics, do we have comic creators from different cultures creating comics of their culture?
Yeah, I mean, they can create comics, the comics they want, as long as it's good.
Yeah.
Like as an editor and a publisher, the only thing that we'll look at is, okay, is it well written? Is it well drawn? Is it well packaged? And is it respectful?
Yeah.
And I will apply these high standards, but we're going to talk quality. We're not going to talk about anything else.
Right.
Whatever they want.
Right. But I'm just thinking that if you have this company where it's like, yes, we love different voices,
mm-hmm. the work or what these people are producing, all these different, you know, voices must be spectacular. I mean,
it is, but at the same time, this is also the thing that I like to highlight is that a lot of big companies had a wake up call last year. And they said, oh, we're going to do diversity. And the bigger companies, the Marvel, the DCs, they started opening doors to those minority creators. And that's great. I love it. We need that. We need them to stick to that. But at the same time, at the end of the day, all the material that is created is still owned by those companies.
Mm.
At Fair Square Comics, creators keep their rights to everything they create. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not interested in owning a piece of anyone else's property. I have my own properties. I'm a creator myself. Mm-hmm. And so I designed a system, a colored system. so you have Fair Square Green. You will see our logo there, like three different logos. You have Fair Square Green, which is the IPs that are owned by me or the company. Mm-hmm. You have Fair Square Purple, which is for every creator who keeps their rights, but we're just the publisher for them. And you have Fair Square Blue, that is for IPs that we license from third-party publishers all around the world and we bring to the United States, or for that new magazine that I created, which is kind of a blend of what my first magazine, Comic Box, was and what I'm doing here with the stories with Fair Square Comics and Noir is the New Black and such.
Okay.
So, and it's a magazine called Mutiny that we kickstarted a couple of months ago with a lot of success, and that will be available regularly in the fall in stores.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's actually a very big deal. I'm glad that you made that clear that they get to keep their rights.
Yes.
As okay.
100%.
Yeah. That's wow. That's great.
Because the thing is, like, a lot of those publishing deals, and I'm having worked at publishers myself, I know all these publishing deals and I know how they work. And but instead of having a publishing deal, what I'm offering is licensing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm offering licensing deals to creators where, like, okay, you own what you own and what you created. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to pay you to publish it through my company.
Mm-hmm.
It's a licensing deal.
Yeah.
So it's very clear. It's very simple. I'll never own anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. And I like how this was inspired by the George Floyd, right?
Yeah.
You got this idea.
I mean, I already had like ideas like this, but George Floyd was the trigger.
Yeah.
It was the trigger. It was clearly the thing where I was so angry that me and my friends, we had to do stuff. We had to do something. And, mm-hmm. and it's been such a wonderful experience to create that graphic novel, Noir is the New Black, because first, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I launched a Kickstarter and I said, oh, I need $36,000. And then it grew to $48,000. And I had creators calling me and say, I want in. I don't want to be left out of this. And others who say, like, I'm not interested, or I don't have time, or I'm working with somebody else. But then they said, like, are you guys doing something else? And yes, we're doing a follow-up already. Like, the book has been made exclusively available for Kickstarter in 2021. In early 2021. But it's going to be released in every bookstore in America on September 28th.
Okay. Wow.
And then we're already working on the follow-up.
Wow. I mean, this is... I love this story because, and I like how you said you became so angry that you had to do something. And it's because, I mean, a lot of people, when they get angry, they do self-destructive or just destructive period things. But to take the anger and turn it into art and creativity and ideas, and to have this entire, like, this company come out of that, that's an inspiring story. I think that a lot of people can really learn from that when you, in those moments when you feel so like the intensity of the anger or the sadness or the whatever, there's some creativity that's just yearning to come out of that experience.
I mean, there's another thing, and I think it's like a pattern for me. In 2015, when I came to America, I was struggling financially, and I was struggling, period, because, like, when you're an immigrant, even if you know the United States because I've been there multiple times, it's different to be a tourist and to be an immigrant.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of things that I didn't know about. I got people who took advantage of me and people who like misled me and sent me in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And I created this book called Intertwine, which is an immigrant superhero experience in New York. The book, I did it on Kickstarter. It was published. Now it's going to be republished in November through my own company because I got my rights back. Mm-hmm. It's the same. It's the same logic. Like in Intertwined, the only thing you see is communities, minorities, and people who are in the shadows helping everybody.
Mm-hmm. People that are in the shadows. That's a great description. Right. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the art of comic book writing, because it seems like there's so much involved in that, with the different panels, and then you have to have the storyline and all the artistic things that go into the drawings.
The first thing that you need to understand when you don't know anything about comics is that comics are a collaborative medium. It's not, it's something that you can do alone, but it's not designed to be done alone. Hmm. It's designed to be a combination, a meeting of the minds, and a meeting of talents, because more talent bring a better comic book. And it proved right every time. Like, I tried, because I'm also drawing. I tried to do stuff all by myself. I don't have that. I don't like it. I mean, some creators like to do everything alone. Yeah. Not my case. I like the collaboration. I like being in a team.
Uh-huh.
I like to oversee teams when I'm the editor, and it's a different hat. So it's collaborative by nature.
Okay.
And so the writer will have to tailor his or her or their ideas so that another person that is not them can translate it into art and understand it and make it understandable by even a bigger pool of person. And so it's a very interesting process, because especially when you work with other creators whose first language is not English. And my first language is not English, but I write in English. I've always written English. I never wrote a comic book in French, never in my entire life.
Even when you were in France?
Yeah, even when I was in France, I was writing in English.
Huh.
I never wrote a single comic book in French. And
because it's easier in English, or
because it's how it came to me.
Oh, okay.
My love for American comics dates from the days where I started to read. Of course, I was reading them in French when I was a little kid, and then when I was good enough to be able to read them in English, like when I was a teenager, I started reading them in English and I never looked back. Mm-hmm. And so my formative years were my teenage and young adult years. I was doing all this in English. It was easy for me. And since I only became a writer when I was 38, so I was mature enough to like master it. I was a late bloomer in that department.
38 is so young. I mean, really. That's just a baby.
I was a baby. Like, when I look back, I was so naive.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, you have to translate your ideas and make it understandable by someone who doesn't care, who doesn't see pictures in their minds the way you see them.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the magic. When you write with precision and you have the ability to convey your ideas with letters, with words, then what the artist gives you back is far superior to what you've written.
Mm.
And it's often not even what you've written, because the artist will take that, will like print their own sensibility over it, and will make sure that it's both your vision and their vision.
Mm-hmm. So is it typically two people working on a comic book? I mean, it's obviously not just that simple, but I mean, as far as just the storyline and illustration, is it usually one writer and then one illustrator?
So the basic structure is one writer, one artist, one color artist, one letterer, one editor. So it's okay. A minimum of like 4 or 5 people.
What did you say? You said a leverer?
A letterer.
Oh, letterer. So
the person who puts the copy in the loops.
Oh, you know? There's a person for that.
Yes, it's a job.
Wow.
it's a real job. And I've had the pleasure of going to art school, sequential art school. And I've seen those artists, those like aspiring artists trying to letter their own job. And every time I was like, you suck. This is a job. This is not your job. Huh. You can't have your, like, it's even easier for a writer to letter than it is for an artist to letter, strangely.
And is that because it's just like the writing, the art of the writing, or what is it? Why is that so?
Well, it's a combination of things. It's balloon placement. It's like the choice of the font. It's the shape of the balloon is how you put the tail is how you, and that's also the role of the editor. The editor comes on top of that and organizes the whole production so that everyone can work to their best level.
Huh. Okay. I didn't even realize.
And that's a job that I've been doing forever. I mean, I've been an editor for
as
long as I can remember. And so, yes, now I could say that I can write, draw, letter, and edit my own books, but I don't like it. So I keep doing it the other way because it makes the book stronger.
Mm-hmm. Now, Fabrice, can you talk a little bit about graphic novels? Have you ever written a graphic novel?
Well, a graphic novel is just a combination of comic books.
Okay.
So it's the same thing. Okay. Of course I did. Mm-hmm. Like, all my comics are graphic novels. The difference, it's a different product because a graphic novel, the perception is a graphic novel is a book.
Right.
And a comic book is a periodic book.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you have 5 issues of a comic book, it becomes one graphic novel.
Okay. 5 issues equal one graphic novel.
Well, 5 or 6. I mean, it depends. Like, or 4. Like a set of a story arc, let's say a story arc, becomes a graphic novel. But sometimes, just like we did with Noir is the New Black, the book is designed to be a graphic novel from the start because it's a collection of short stories. Mm-hmm. And each of the stories is not long enough to have a comic, nor it does make sense. So some projects are great as straight to graphic novel. Some projects are great to be first offered as comics, then collected into graphic novels.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. So the graphic novel is just like, it's a novel, like a lot novel, but the comic books are like periodicals. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily go on the same market. Like, we have what we call the direct market, which is all the specialty stores, like the comic book stores, where you find the periodicals, but you also find the graphic novels or the collected edition, and you have the other independent bookstores, larger book chain, Amazon, where mostly you find the graphic novels. But you can also sometimes find, especially online, you can find the periodicals. So it's all blurred, but like, people who want to find the right product for them, they find it.
Yeah.
And I have to add that now that we're going back to conventions and in-person events this is also a great place for people to discover what we're doing, especially independent creators like us, because we don't, again, I was saying it earlier, we don't have the marketing power to just like buy $10,000 worth of ads online and have people, everyone in America, know who we are. But every time we show up at a show, people like pass by our table, and sometimes they will just pass by and not stop, but most of the time they will stop, they will chat, and they will discover not just a book or a story, but real people like you and me. And they will, we'll engage conversation, and it will become a human experience. And that's basically what I'm looking for. I'm looking forward to going back to in-person events again next month, in order to have people really see what we're doing, what's our mission, and how we're doing it.
Okay. Fabrice, I can't believe we're out of time. This was wonderful.
It's fun. I hope you learned a lot today.
I did learn. I learned a whole lot more than I thought I would learn. Tell us where we can find you.
I'm very easy to find on social networks, but like the best place to find me is through the company, because I answer every email and every phone call, and I give my phone number to everybody. Like, everybody can talk to me. My phone number is +1 if you don't live in the United States, 323-405-9401. You can text me, and you're part of the game. You're part of the family, and we can have a conversation. We can talk about comics. We can talk about the books. You can give me your feedback. I can take ideas, whatever. You can also find us online at fairsquarecomics.com. If you have a story, you can submit a story. I will answer personally to every story. It will take some time. There are a lot of stories at one precise moment, but I answer to everybody. And of course, on the social networks, either at Fabrice Sapolsky on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything, or at Fair Square Comics, both.
Wow. You sound very busy. You take all these phone calls.
Yeah, tell me about it. but you know, the thing is that when you're passionate,
yeah,
and you're positive about what you do, I think you can convince a lot of people. Like, because people, especially, this is something that I learned going to conventions, is that especially when you're a writer, when you're an artist, it's easy. You have an immediate reaction to art. You like it or you don't. Mm-hmm. But when you're a writer, people are not buying your story. They don't have time to read it. They're buying you.
Mm.
And whether it's crowdfunding, events, anything, people buy you. So I'd better show who I am. I'd better show my enthusiasm, my passion for the medium, my passion for the creation, my passion for independent comics, and my passion for diversity and inclusion. Because if I don't, then I'm just like everybody else. But I'm not. I'm unique, just like you are. And we're trying to show people our real colors. Right.
Yeah. I love that. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for do you have final words of wisdom for anyone who is looking into becoming a comic book creator, maybe like a young person who's thinking about it, and maybe they even had people tell them, why would you want to do that?
Well, I'm the living proof that you should never give up. Mm-hmm. and you should always keep chasing your dreams, because no matter how people will discourage you, there's always room for you. Like, mm-hmm. There's always room for you, because like, talent is not duplicable. So whoever you are, if you think that I'm leaning towards this or I'm leaning towards that, you will make mistakes. You will write horrible stories. You will draw horrible stories. You will edit horrible books. But at the end, you will become better. And if you stick with it, you're going to go somewhere. Like, I literally learned, I taught myself how to draw after going to shows and being frustrated because I wasn't making any money. I was losing money every time I was at a show, and I love going at shows. And so one of my friends told me, well, you should draw, because that's in you. You've been a designer. It shouldn't be that hard. Well, it was very hard. It took me 6 years to have a decent level where I could sell my stuff. But now that I do, I love it. Because it's also an escape mechanism. Like, when I need to focus, I just stop what I'm doing, I draw. And everyone should find their escape mechanism. Everybody should find the place where they're happy, they can refocus and keep being creative. For me, it's drawing, it's writing, it's making comics and everything. But for you, it might be something else. It might be, I don't know, working on a car or cooking or whatever, or doing like, or painting furniture, whatever you want, but for me it's that, and you never shall give up. Never.
Thank you. That was beautiful. I learned so much about comic books. I had no idea that there was a specific person to do the lettering in a comic book, which makes complete sense, because that is an art in and of itself. So I hope that you were able to glean some bit of wisdom from my conversation with Fabrice. I really love his message of inclusion, and there is room for you as long as you are willing to put in the time and the work to really learn your craft, hone your craft,
become better. Don't be discouraged by disappointments or setbacks. Just keep at it. And eventually there will be a breakthrough if you are dedicated. So he's very accessible, as you heard. He even publishes his phone number on his website. So please give his website a visit and his social media. In the meantime, you could also visit zazo.com and sign up for my newsletter. You can follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood and Instagram and Facebook. I always have to pause whenever I'm doing my social media because I feel like there's so many. Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for joining me this week, and I will see you next week when I talk to another fabulous person. Bye-bye.